The Black Show Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Good evening and welcome to Wandsworth Radio. You're listening to the Black Show Arts Hour. I'm Aisha, and in the studio with me this evening, I've got Matt Boothman.
Good evening.
And Ellie Picken.
Hello!
And this week on the show, we are going to be playing you a interview with Tom Weston-Jones that Ellie, you did with him a couple of months ago now, I think.
Yes. I did, correct.
I'm going to be talking about a experience that I had on Friday night at a comedy show where I had to be on stage, which I don't know if anyone else knows that that's not really my bag.
But you love the limelight, Aisha.
I actually liked it a lot more than I thought I did, but I'll talk about that later.
Weren't you saying a couple of shows ago you wanted to do the, like, get up and read your childhood diaries?
Oh yeah, but that's controlled. I'm controlling that. I had no control over this situation. It was terrifying.
I look forward to hearing more about that.
But the first thing that we always do is this.
The Matt Boothman Film Review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
Matt, what are you reviewing for us this week?
As demanded last show, Independence Day, colon, resurgence. Mm.
Don't say colon, resurgence.
I felt bad when I said it like that last show and realised how it sounded. And now that I've seen it, I don't feel so bad.
You're owning it and you feel like it is being used with purpose.
I feel like it's appropriate.
Okay.
So this is the sequel to the first Independence Day movie, which was 20 years ago.
Oh, we're so old.
Yep. I definitely feel old.
Is this a cash cow, by the way?
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, that's presumably why they did it. Yeah. Whether or not it actually is a cash cow, I'm not sure.
No, I've no idea. Certainly the cinema I was in seeing it was not particularly full, and it was the Friday that it came out. So, don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, tell us if it was actually good enough.
Well, so the setup is that it's basically aged in real time, so it's 20 years from the events of the first Independence Day movie. And we have used all of the technology from all the crashed alien spaceships that we destroyed in the first movie to create this sort of technological utopia world where we're told there hasn't been any conflict for 20 years and technology is amazing and everybody's quality of life is great, except that all we really actually see of that is, like, anti-gravity helicopters and fighter jets and better guns.
Yes.
Like loads and loads of guns and
bombs.
Yeah,
we don't see inside anyone's home, which is a bit of a missed opportunity. I suppose it's a budget thing, but I mean, it would have been great to see, like, what the standard domestic setup is now.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely more interested in that than, like, how my quality of life is improved by better guns.
Yeah.
Doesn't really affect
me. Already it doesn't make that much sense because they're like, it's a world without conflict, but we've used this technology to make all better guns. It's obviously because we're expecting the aliens to come back.
I'm sure.
So they've improved their defense system. Yeah.
And also, so we see some beautiful utopian American cityscapes, and then we go to what is captioned as Central Africa in that Hollywood way, where Africa is a whole country, is one country by itself.
Oh, it's all so dusty. Yeah.
And, like, Africa is still a shanty town ruled by warlords in this unified, peaceful
They've just got
world.
Better guns.
They've just got warlords with better guns, although the warlord still uses machetes as well.
Yes.
Because Africa.
Yes.
Oh,
accurate Africa.
Yeah. So, that, like, the nods to this sort of the world is unified now are our African warlord joins the team, and there is Chinese fighter pilot who mostly just gets macked on by one of the Americans.
Yeah, a white American man.
Yeah, and otherwise doesn't really have a personality.
I don't know, I think she was aiming for sassy, but she missed.
Okay.
Or rather, the writing missed.
Yeah. So, I mean, apart from those two characters, it's basically still, like, we're in a unified world, but America!
Yes, because they have this, like, dream team of young fighter pilot people, and it feels like there's a lot of tokenism going on.
Yeah. So, of course, the aliens come back, and they're bigger and scarier than they were before. And it's, as in the first movie, it's up to lots of... that the aliens take out lots of infrastructure and people that was in place, and so it's up to a ragtag band of like misfits and not particularly suited people to try and team up and take them down.
Yeah.
Except they don't feel quite as misfitty and underdogish as they did in the first movie.
No,
I don't think.
I miss that drunk man.
The crop duster guy. I feel like he was kind of the iconic thing of what made that first movie work, was that it was, these are people who are not suited, but they're like the people who are left.
Normals.
So so it's up to them.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like there were really that many like normal people in
it's
this.
It's up to the president
yeah.
of the last film and a top scientist.
Yeah.
And
Jeff Goldblum's character, yeah. David Levinson, so he was, again, he was the underdog in the first movie because nobody really believed him when he was like, aliens are coming. But of course now he's been proved right, so he's an authority, so everybody just does what he says.
Yes, he's the expert.
Yeah.
Is he the scientist?
He is the scientist, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
And Will Smith's been killed off screen. But his son is in it, but they don't give his son anything to do except be the black pilot.
Yeah. Mm. He's a total symbol. And, again, no personality. They sort of try with the kind of, no spoilers, but there is a very tiny, dry subplot. And so he punches a guy.
Yeah. There's some tension between him and Liam Hemsworth.
Yeah, but the emotion is just not there.
No.
It is not evident.
Mm. Can I actually ask how did Will Smith die?
On a test flight.
Yeah, testing a new anti-gravity jet.
Right. Were people sad? Was there an emotion
about it?
It
doesn't happen
in
the film. It's something that's happened years previous to the film's set time.
Right.
Yeah. So there doesn't seem to be much emotion about it.
I think
it.
They name an airfield after him.
Sure.
Oh, that's nice of them.
Yeah.
But considering he basically saved the world, it's quite a boring way to go.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Also,
R.I.P. Will Smith.
Yeah.
Independence.
So they actually, I was kind of excited for this by the trailer and some of the press stuff. Like, there were people talking in interviews about, like, so the concept is that the aliens who nearly wiped us all out really easily in the first movie, it turns out they were just like a scouty scientist party, and now the actual alien military is coming to get us, and they're so much bigger and scarier and nastier, and they can wipe us out with a flick of their little fingers. Actually, really, like, none of that is really in the film.
Mm.
It's fine, maybe it was in kind of the background and the concept design, but none of it really comes through. All we really get is just all the ships are bigger and all the aliens are bigger.
It does seem to be a scale issue, isn't
just,
it?
Yeah.
Because they even say in the film, their technology is just the same. Like, they haven't advanced in any way. They are essentially the same enemy as film one, just a bit bigger.
Yeah.
And in fact, they're not all bigger, it's just one of them that's big.
Yeah.
And it's only big in terms of being like the size of a block of flats. It's not like it's taken the world in its claw and squished it.
No, I mean the ship they turn up in is impressively big.
Yes.
Like, it's basically the size of half the planet. Like,
yeah.
It squats over half the globe.
Yeah.
So we get some quite impressive shots of that. But it's almost so big that you can't really
comprehend it.
Yeah.
Mm, right. What do I've got no recollection whatsoever of Independence Day 1. What do the aliens look like?
So they're sort of, they've got these sort of big bony head plates and lots of tentacles on their backs and like dog legs.
Oh yeah, yep, dog legs.
Yeah.
Well, dog legs in that they bend backwards and
with
have like claws on the bottom.
Sure.
So they're kind of standard alien appearance and also standard in that it's kind of an exoskeleton type armor thing. Mm-hmm. And on the inside they're much smaller and squidgier.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. That's ringing some bells with the head thing. So
The head looks like a bit like those lizards which have the pop-out collar thing going on.
Oh, yeah, throwneck lizard of my country. Yeah?
Of your country, yes.
That's where they come
they're called
from.
The lizard of Aisha's country.
Anyway, continue, Matt.
Yeah, so it tries to recapture the stuff you love about Independence Day, or, you know, if you don't remember Independence Day, then tries to sort of recapture that magic with the sort of, what everybody remembers is the inspiring Bill Pullman speech as the president.
Which they do include in this new film.
So it's sort of at the beginning replayed, but they try to put some inspiring speeches in there, both for Bill Pullman and William Fichtner, who's the new president. But they don't really land. They're kind of bland and forgettable and don't really say anything.
It's rhetoric.
Yeah. I feel like it's... I had a look at the script credits and compared them for the two movies. Independence Day was written by Roland Emmerich and one writing partner, whose name is Dean Devlin. And Independence Day Resurgence has 5 screenwriting credits, the same 2 plus 3 more. And those other 3 have all done stuff that I've enjoyed, like one of them worked on Source Code and one of them worked on The Amazing Spider-Man and stuff like that. But I think there's a too many cooks problem going on. It means that it doesn't really have any personality.
Did they all get a section and they all wanted to put in an inspiring speech?
Maybe. Could have.
Well, there's so many, but they, as a result, don't pack much punch.
Yeah. And it tries to recapture that sort of ensemble feel of lots of threads going on and lots of people sort of seeing the fallout of the events from lots of different points of view. But most of the points of view this time are sort of military or have something to do with it. And there's only really one point of view, which is covering like the effects on the ground.
Yeah.
Which is Jeff Goldblum's character's dad, who is like driving a school bus full of photogenic tweens through the desert.
Yeah.
God.
Rescuing them from tsunamis and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It ends up suffering from that Man of Steel problem, and which was also a problem with X-Men Apocalypse, which I saw but didn't review here, which is huge destruction and no sense of like the human cost.
Mm-hmm.
Which is sort of, you know, that's how things have changed in the 20 years since the first one, is that we like big spectacles of destruction where we don't really see the effects of it on anyone.
Yeah, which I have a problem with, because for me, I'm really only engaged if there's a strong character-driven narrative.
Yeah.
And that was seriously lacking in this film.
It's really just a noise film, really.
Yeah. Watching there are even some of those massive like tracking shots where actually my eyes couldn't quite focus on it because it's all too quick. They've just been spliced, those action sequences spliced together so jarringly that it's actually quite hard to watch, literally.
Yeah, and you were 3D.
Yes, so that maybe had something to do with it.
Potentially.
But it was...
The closest I got to feeling an emotion was some of the stuff between Bill Pullman's ex-president character and his daughter, played by Michael Monroe, who we enjoyed in It Follows many shows ago now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She's very good. They don't give her too much. They don't give her a lot to do for a lot of the movie, but she does get stuff to do.
Yes,
I'll forgive it quite a lot.
I think she was the closest to developing as a character.
Yeah,
and I think they clearly made quite an effort there to make her an interesting female character.
Yeah,
but that did come across in sort of like, oh, we'll have her do a punch here. She does a hit, she could have done that like a man does it.
Oh, dear.
She's a presidential aide, but she's also been through flight school and, like, she only quit being a fighter pilot to, like, was it to take care of...
To
look after her dad, who's gone a bit crazy.
Who appears to be mentally ill.
Yeah.
But actually, he's right.
Yeah.
They are coming back.
I was happy that she gets back in the cockpit, spoilers.
But, yeah.
Which is good. There's a gay relationship in it, which I didn't find offensive.
Yes.
Which is good.
Hooray.
You're referring to the scientists.
I am referring to the scientists.
It's so nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Day after, a couple of weeks after Pride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, it is Pride. Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
It does fall into a trope that a lot of Hollywood movies do with gay relationships, though, which I won't say too much because it's a spoiler, but...
Yes.
While the relationship is there, it's fine. The other thing that I really noticed was Liam Hemsworth's weird yells while he's piloting things.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
I found it quite distracting. Like that. So there's a thing.
Was he whooping?
Well, there's a thing in movies where like somebody's piloting a jet or a spaceship or whatever, and they're pushing the cockpit and yelling. Mm-hmm. Being like, or like, you know, pulling the trigger and yelling and that sort of stuff. And Liam Hemsworth is called on to do it a lot in this movie. And he just, like, he has a really weird way of delivering it.
That I really want to really rewatch distracting. Just that now. But
maybe we can follow that up on a future show.
Perhaps.
Yeah. Maybe that could be a new promo for this Liam Hemsworth.
We'll do a supercut of Liam Hemsworth's weird piloting yells. So overall, it's not as silly or as self-aware as I hoped it would be based on the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of big and unwieldy and just completely predictable. Like,
yeah,
none of it is really surprising. It's meh.
It kind of follows the map of the first one, really.
Yeah.
And this isn't a spoiler, but at the end it very much sets itself up for sequels.
Oh yeah.
And I feel like that's not likely to happen on the basis that this hasn't been what it promised to be or what it tried to be.
No.
Well, see, I sort of sent you to see this on the proviso that it was going to be so bad it's good.
It's not even.
No.
So it's not ridiculous enough to be so bad it's
good. And it's
good.
Not self-aware enough, I don't think. There are a couple of nods that I enjoyed. Like there's the shot in the wing mirror for Jeff Goldblum, which is a hark back to Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
And
well, they
just
keep giving that to him, don't they?
Yes.
All the time.
I didn't clock that as a Jurassic Park reference,
I did.
Actually.
Yeah, because it's a shot in the wing mirror of something chasing them and they're in a vehicle trying to get away. And there was also harking back to the first film, both obviously in terms of it is a sequel, but also things like, you know, Will Smith punches an alien when he's just been out of a parachute, and that happens again in this one.
Mm.
So...
This is probably a really stupid thing to say, but Independence Day, I get confused and tend to splice together in my mind with Men in Black.
Yeah, well, they're both Will Smith films.
That's really the only...
And they're about aliens.
Yeah, that's I get really confused. Because I'm thinking when you're talking, I'm like, oh, do they have that thing that, you know, wipes people's memories of what's happened? And I'm like, oh no, I think that's Men in Black.
And that great dance-off at the end.
You know, I would watch a Men in Black in an Independence Day crossover.
Yeah.
I feel like it's already, like, in my head. I've done it. It's in my head, guys. Like, it's already occurred.
They're already crossing over Men in Black with Jump Street. So
are they?
Yes, they are. The next Jump Street will be, like, new Men in Black recruitment origin story for those two characters.
That sounds kind of awesome.
Mm,
so
oh God.
I could go for, like, a Men in Black Independence Day Jump Street shared universe stuff.
Absolutely.
Well, I'm actually quite disappointed that Vicky isn't here for this show, because I know that she was super excited about seeing this, and
she's going to be disappointed.
Yeah, I think she is, but she might be in the camp of she loves Independence Day 1 so much that she can look past the fact that this is a little bit not great. So potentially, if she is up to it, maybe we could get her to do a bonus on the podcast of how much she hated it or loved it. I feel like it would be love for her. But yeah, thank you, Matt, for doing Independence Day : Resurgence, which is probably my favourite title to say that we've done so far this year. It just sounds really horrible.
It's immature, and I'm not sorry.
Do you have any ideas about what you might be doing next or what's coming up?
No, not really. We're
it's
into
sort of summer blockbusters
now. We are
now.
Fully into summer blockbusters now. Mm. So it's going to be a case of what looks least bad, probably.
Yeah. Well, I want to see, I don't think, I wouldn't count it as a blockbuster, but there's Miss Peregrine's School for something, the Unusual? I don't know. It's about Unusual Children. It's Tim Burton.
Okay.
Oh, interesting. You saw, did you see Pets?
Yeah, I saw Secret Life of Pets.
Which I've been wanting to see since I first saw the trailer that popped up in my Facebook probably six months ago.
It's really good. I think the trailers do it justice. It's pretty much like the trailers the whole way through.
Is it like 80% dogs or...
It's quite a mix of animals.
Okay. Which, you know, like that's okay. But as long as there's like more, it's more weighted in
the protagonists are dogs.
Okay, good. I can get on board with that.
The supporting cast are like... as a budgie, a falcon.
A falcon?
Yeah.
Who has a falcon for a pet?
Well, it's kept on a roof, so it's not like an in-house pet.
Right.
Okay. And there's also the lead bad guy is a bunny rabbit.
Cute.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of birds, I suppose, I am looking at the Fringe program right now, and that's what we're going to talk about. If you haven't seen it, it is a... What is that, an owl?
It is an owl.
It's an owl, and he's wearing a gimp suit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a very spiky...
This is the Edinburgh Fringe that we're talking about.
Yeah.
The owl's name is Beaky.
Yeah, and I said to Matt before that they completely, like, did... I think that was a Twitter decision that people decided to call him that.
Yep.
Yeah, so people chose that, and I feel like they missed a trick, and they should have called him Beaky McBeakface.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that is kind of done, though, I should say.
But just Beaky, like...
It feels kind of unimaginative.
Very unimaginative he's dressed.
The whole sort of ethos of the Fringe that they're trying to push with this image is we are defying the norm, and it's all crazy and original.
Yeah,
stuff you wouldn't expect.
We're going to be tweeting a picture of the Fringe cover.
Yeah, of Beaky. But we're going to play a fun game now, which is Edinburgh Fringe Roulette from the program. So You guys have been to the Fringe before.
Yeah, several times.
A few times. I've never been myself, just because I haven't, and I haven't been here for that long, really. But yeah, so we're going to talk about just some random ones that we open up to.
Yeah.
So let's start the first ever game of Edinburgh Fringe Roulette.
Now, let's set some ground rules. Do we want to go completely random or only within the theatre section?
I think let's do one first out of theatre.
Okay. All right, I'm opening at random. Here we go. Okay. We're on pages 372 to 373.
Yep.
Ellie, do you want to stick your finger on the page?
Should I close my eyes and do it?
Yeah, yeah,
yes,
do it.
That one.
Okay. The Unknown Soldier by Grist the Mill Productions. A story of comradeship, loyalty and betrayal following the carnage of World War
One. Oh, gosh.
Fringe Guru named it his all-time number one Fringe play. 5starsfringeguru.com.
All right.
What do we reckon?
Sounds dark.
Sounds dark and...
But obviously sounds like it's... well received.
Yeah.
We picked a good one.
Yeah.
We won that round.
Yeah. So that one's at Assembly Hall, which is, you know, that's one of the more sort of central, prestigious actual theatre venues.
Yeah, established. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So, yeah, yeah, not just like a pub garden. Cool. I like doing this game with you guys because you actually know the venues. It gives a whole nother level to the game.
So okay. Shall we do another? Do you want to do a random page?
Okay, completely maybe. Random page.
Matt and I were also, as Ellie chooses her page right now, Matt and I were saying that the amount of comedy, I think, is growing year by year.
Every year the comedy pages get larger, right?
Matt's swirling his finger around.
And there.
Okay. That is Axis of Awesome Won't Ever Not Stop Giving Up.
Oh, that's a mouthful.
We're in the comedy pages now, the aforementioned growing comedy pages.
And the blurb says, Jordan Lee and Benny are back with a brand new hour of world-class musical comedy. They've toured all over the earth and their videos have over 200 million hits online. Now, I know these guys.
Do you?
Well, not know them. I mean, I know of them.
Same here.
They're my friends. So they did, the most famous one is about their only being, about the chords. You know the one I mean.
Vaguely, yeah. So they're musical comedy, aren't they?
Yeah. And they're at the Gilded Balloon.
Musical comedy scares me sometimes, I think.
Oh, I love it.
Really?
Yeah. Why are you scared?
I don't know. I just, whenever I see the word musical, I'm always like, because, you know, I don't really like musicals.
Yeah,
so
but
much.
It's not but usually,
when it's funny.
It's not usually a funny musical. Of songs that are funny.
Yeah.
So it's not.
Generally, I do like that.
Good.
If I see it, then I'm always like, yeah, this is funny. But you know when sometimes it's just a bit hit and miss?
Yeah. Well, I would say the Axis of Awesome are a pretty good, strong place to start because they are well known in that world.
Hmm. All right. Should we do one more?
Yeah. Completely random or within a certain section?
Completely random.
Okay.
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 Right. Shuffling of pages.
Where are we? We're theatre, I think. Yeah.
Is the page red? If it's red,
yes,
it's theatre.
Red.
Okay. And there.
Equations for a Moving Body, a story about the physiology of long-distance triathlon, about when our brains tell our bodies to stop, the psychology of carrying on, the people we meet on our journey to the finish line.
Wow, that is niche.
The Fringe literally has everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That is a play about the psychology of how your body works when you do a triathlon.
Yeah, it's described as multimedia storytelling.
Wow. That's never heard of that before. That could be a good one to see. Where's that playing?
That is on at the Summer Hall. I don't know that venue.
I've been to Summer Hall. Summer Hall is a Masonic hall. It's a Freemasons hall.
Nice.
Okay. Yeah. Excellent. Let's do one more. Yeah. I like this game.
Okay.
I like it a lot.
There.
Okay. We're in comedy.
Okay.
We're in purple.
You do the you do.
Okay.
Ellie,
I'll
you
do the spinning
finger this
finger of death.
Matt's gonna read one.
This one.
Okay. Spank.
Okay, cool.
I'm aware of Spank. Spank is an underbelly staple at the Fringe. Spank returns for an incredible 13th year with sexy hosts, awesome comedians, and gratuitous nudity.
Hooray! Oh!
With the most exciting comedy and cabaret talent on the Fringe, don't miss the best wild night out, Scotland on Sunday, at the festival.
Wow.
So this is it's a sort of cabaret night. I think it goes on pretty much every night of the Fringe. And mostly what I know it for is that it has a feature where you're allowed to go and pitch your show to the whole Spank audience as long as you for free, as long as you do it nude.
Oh,
that's horrific.
Would anybody take up?
No,
time up
not.
On that?
God, no. Who would?
People do every year.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say
the Fringe changes people.
It's a magical place.
All right. Well, that was the first ever Fringe Roulette. I liked that.
Yeah, we should do this every show until the Fringe.
Yeah, let's definitely. Yeah, okay. So forevermore, well, until the Fringe begins.
Yeah.
Or whilst it's still going, even. You can expect to hear us just reading random things.
Yeah. From I think it's definitely program. An exercise in showing you how very varied the Fringe is. Yeah.
Is anybody else here going this year?
I'm not. I'm last year, so I'm taking a year off.
I've had a couple of years off, and I'm going to be there in the third week of August.
Oh, you need to be representing and documenting everything you see.
I will be.
Like
I'll
what I've
reporting
done.
Back.
You can be our roving reporter. You can. I'll give you a microphone. You can take it with you.
Sweet.
Fantastic. Well, that was Edinburgh Fringe Roulette. Now we are going to hear, speaking of nudity, Ellie, you...
you need to put your clothes back on.
Ellie is fully clothed. It's all fine. But Ellie spoke to Tom Weston Jones a couple of months ago, and he was talking to you about being nude. You've talked actually a lot. This whole interview is very much about him being nude.
I mean, that was not the original focus of my questions, but yes, we did discuss that. Nudity on stage and screen. So Tom's done a lot of stage and screen acting. It was just, you know, just a topic that came up in our conversation. No prior motives there.
No. Well, this is Ellie talking to Tom.
So I'm Ellie, and I'm here talking quite excitedly to the wonderful Tom Weston Jones. Hello, Tom.
Hello. Hello, Ellie.
Hi. Hi. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, I went to university at Royal Holloway, where, you know, we came across each other. And I graduated in 2008.
Correct.
From Royal Holloway. I'm glad I got that one right. I studied drama there. I went to drama school in Bristol after that. And I've been working as an actor for 5 years now, after I graduated in 2010, which is scary. 6 years now, because it's 2016.
I know, horrifying,
isn't
it?
Which is mad. It's just all flying by. And yeah, I've been working all over the place, really, in whatever I can get my hands on, but mainly in television and theatre.
Excellent. That's a good origin story.
Yeah. There's no villains or anything, though.
Not yet.
No.
There's time. So what's a kind of quick summary of your career so far? What sort of things have you done since you graduated?
So a quick summary. The first job that I had when I graduated was an advert, actually. It was a commercial. But I probably should stop saying that about people, because I want to...
I'm going to look it up as soon as I get home.
Oh,
what is it?
It's very embarrassing. It's just an Ulster Bank advert. But it was the first thing that I ever did. And it actually made me realise how any actors in commercials are they get treated like crap. It's really quite sad. But anyway, it was actually quite an exciting thing to do, because it made me afford... I could afford to move to London, which was great. And when I was here, I did a play at the Hampstead Theatre. That was the sort of first proper job I had, and that was called Enlightenment by Sheila Stevenson. And that was a great play, quite a Marmite play, really. It split people down the middle, but that's sort of the kind of thing that I quite like.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I did... I had my first job on television, which was in Spooks, and I played Sasha Gabrick, who was this Russian character who worked for the Secret Service, the Russian Secret Service. And then after that, I did a Channel 4 series called World Without End, which was sort of a medieval epic. It was the second part of a two-book series. The first one was Pillars of the Earth, and this one was World Without End. And then the job after that was Copper, and I did that for 2 years. That was two series set in New York, filmed in Toronto, but set in New York in the 1860s. And then after that, I'm losing my track of time.
You're doing so well.
I'm losing my track of time.
Do you need me to look up your Wikipedia
article? No, I've got it. And then after that, I did a series called Not Safe for Work, which was a comedy series on Channel 4.
Very funny. Yeah. I really enjoyed that.
I loved that. It was my first time doing comedy, as it were, and it was, one of my favourite jobs, really. And then after that, I did a play at the Armida, which was my first time doing Shakespeare, and that was a real challenge, but I loved it. That was doing The Merchant of Venice, and I played Bassanio. And then after that, I filmed Dickensian a few months after that. There's obviously different spells of time not working in between those jobs at various different lengths. But yeah, Dickensian was the last job I did, apart from a short film I did recently, which was quite fun.
And Dickensian's just finished airing on BBC.
Yeah.
Which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Oh,
started watching it at Christmas with fam.
Yeah.
Quite glad that the episode where we saw your naked bottom wasn't the one I watched with my family, because I enjoyed pointing out who you were and probably wouldn't have been so appropriate for that episode.
I'm amazed we got away with me getting out of the bathtub in the nud.
I know.
At 8:30. I was really surprised.
I was also very surprised, Tom.
I think everybody was.
And I looked, and I looked obviously because I was watching the television, and I thought to myself, that is definitely Tom, because there was no cutaway, so yeah. There was no opportunity to swap in a double there.
No, that was, I am my own bum double.
And is that written into your contract?
It depends. Amazing. I don't mind showing a bum. I mean, it felt appropriate for the show. Nudity is a weird one, because you want to only do it when the time is right and the job is right and the thing's right, because when it's on film, it's forever.
Yes.
So, yeah. It was kind of a no-brainer. I've been naked on stage before, and that was the first job I ever had, and that was a strange thing, because I was only 21. Sure. I think I actually called my dad and said, "Dad, they've asked me to be naked on stage. What am I going to do?" He was like, "Just grow a pair and do it. It'll be fine."
Grow a pair and do it.
And yeah, I did it, and my parents watched it, and that was what I was.
And haven't disowned
about.
You?
No.
So.
No, they haven't yet.
Yeah, not yet. Good. What's that like, though, being naked on stage? Did you have to do it a lot in rehearsal, and then by the time you got to doing it in front of an audience, it wasn't so much of a big deal?
Well, actually, the director, Ed Hall, he was quite clever, actually, because in the script, it's just he's in underwear, and he's covered in blood, and he's cut himself and stuff. It's quite a weird scene. But he felt it just wasn't really working for some reason. And then the day before we were about to do the press night, he said, "You know, let's just make it more shocking. Can you just lose the underwear?" So I didn't have to rehearse it. He just said, "Do it." And we didn't tell the other actors. So it's sort of like a reveal. The duvet, he drops the duvet that's covering him, and they see that he's naked, covered in blood. And their response was...
real.
Real. Because I was just bollock naked in front of them.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, that's quite a baptism of fire for a first
sort
job,
of,
isn't it?
Yeah. Love to say that I, you know, grabbed it, for want of a better word.
That's good. We'll leave that in.
Grabbed
That's
the bull
good.
By the horns and just went, "Yeah, I'll definitely do it." But yeah, it was a hard decision to make. Just because I'm a man doesn't mean I like being naked in front of other people.
Sure.
It's not, I don't think anybody would say that they enjoy that. Some people might.
Toddlers
might.
Toddlers really enjoy
narcissists,
it.
Narcissists. Yeah. But you know, it's a weird thing. Eventually, I didn't mind. I didn't mind at all. In a weird way, it kind of felt. Nice. You could sort of made me think, if I can do that, I can do anything on stage, in a way. So, yeah. This is the most I've ever spoken about being naked.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, this was not actually on my list of things to ask you, so... It did remind me, though, when you said covered in blood, that when we were at uni, you played Stanley, wasn't it?
In
Streetcar.
Yeah.
And you actually cut yourself on stage.
I did, yeah. I've still got the... cut on my thumb.
Have
there.
You?
Yeah.
And you did sort of spray biohazardous material everywhere.
Yeah, which is what it was deemed, biohazardous waste.
Yes.
Biohazardous waste all over the stage. I cut myself on one of the boxes because I slammed the lid down on my finger, stupidly. And then I just sort of waddled around the stage, losing blood the entire time. And it was quite funny because I could see everyone else on stage was looking at me like... They didn't really know how to say it, because you can't save someone. You can't throw a line in going...
"Oh, you're bleeding.
Oh, you're bleeding.
I'll get a bandage."
In a New Orleans accent.
Yeah.
That was pretty terrible. You can tell
that was excellent.
It slipped
Good
since
job.
Then.
It's fine. If you have another job based there, you
based
can
there,
practice.
I can work on it.
I mean, that's commitment to the role.
Mm.
Naked and bleeding.
Naked and bleeding.
So, here's a question for you. Is there, like, a role that you really want... to get, whether that's something specific like Doctor Who, or if there's something, just a genre or a type of role that you really want to go for next?
I don't think there's any particular role, because I'd like to do new writing, so I don't know what that role might be. But I will do anything if it's good. I don't care about the size or scale of things. I just think as long as it's got a good pedigree and the people behind it are worth working with, then I'll do anything. I'd love to do more Shakespeare in a way. I don't necessarily think Shakespeare is my comfort zone, but that's kind of why I want to do it a bit more. But yeah, in terms of a kind of part, I think science fiction, you mentioning Doctor Who, yeah, I'm a huge fan of science fiction. So that would be another genre to jump into. I think I haven't done anything science fiction, and I'd like to do things more... modern day.
Mm.
Three of the television jobs that I've had have all been, you know, period pieces. And I worry sometimes.
Are you worried that you're going to get typecast
as
having a period face?
Historical face Tom. Yeah, period face. Which isn't a really great phrase.
No, sorry about that. Historical phase.
Historical phase, yeah. It was much, yeah. Much, much nicer.
It's a shame Downton's finished, really, because you could have been a shoo-in there.
Exactly.
Who do you admire in the industry?
Loads of people. One of my favourite actors is Paddy Considine.
Mm.
I really love him. Just some of the old films that he did with Shane Meadows are some of my favourite films. Loads of people.
It's like asking what music do you like?
Yeah, I don't really have a favourite actor. I think Paddy Considine probably comes quite close.
Is there stuff that you've seen recently that's inspired you?
Actually, it's funny you mention it. I watched Trainwreck, which is actually just an all-out comedy, to be honest. Quite a dark comedy. But I thought it was absolutely brilliant in how ridiculous it was and how... It actually brought me to tears. Partly because I was on a plane whilst I was watching it, and I always get emotional when I fly. I don't know why. It's the altitude. It was just the altitude. That's what I said whilst I was wiping tears away.
Sobbing on the person next to me.
And I absolutely loved that. There's actually a lot of films I need to catch up on. I need to go and see, so there's some inspiration to come. I also watched... a massive Tom Hardy fan, and I loved Legend. It was just so weird. It was such a weird film.
And playing two characters that are acting against each other all the time.
Yeah. And the two performances are in two different styles as well. It seems to be one of the twins was just completely real, at ease, sort of like him, I imagine.
Mm.
And the other one, he just went completely the other direction. It was, really cool.
Nuts.
You don't really get... I can't think of any other opportunity an actor has had, other than Armie Hammer from Social Network to play the twins.
But have you seen Orphan Black?
Yes, I actually know Tatiana.
Do
that.
You?
She is
incredible.
She's amazing. She was in World Without End that I did years ago.
Yeah.
And we met on that, and she's so nice, like so hardworking, and just really good. Just really, really good.
Her accents are flawless.
Yeah, absolutely. She works her ass off. I remember seeing her while she was filming it, and she was like a zombie because she was just working.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine because the amount of research you have to do for one character.
Yeah.
Let alone like six that she's playing on a regular basis.
Yeah.
So what's happening now? What's the current?
Well, now I'm just auditioning for things all over the place. Really, it's pilot season at the moment, so there's just a shed load of 1 hour pilots coming out of the US. So I'm just literally auditioning for them. And I'm also writing my own film at the moment.
Are you?
Yeah, which I've been doing for a long time now, but it sort of feels like it's finally coming together.
Do you have a mentor for your writing?
I have a friend who I write with. I do have people who I know are writers who I will pester and prod when I think that, you know, it's above grade 9 level kindergarten writing. It's a long work in progress, but it's something that I fill my time with when I'm not acting, because I think if you don't have something that you're passionate for, therein madness lies, basically. Like you can have long swathes of not doing anything, and that is the biggest challenge as an actor. That is the hardest thing. Just to keep yourself focused and keep yourself full of belief.
Yeah, motivated.
And motivated, yeah. And that happens, I think, with actors of all size and shape, not necessarily ones who are, you know, struggling to get their first job, or what the people who are incredibly famous go through ebbs and flows.
I remember Olivia Colman saying that after Broadchurch aired, no one was ringing her because... They assumed she must be really busy.
And that
she wouldn't want to do any of the projects they had lined up.
Exactly.
Because she must be so busy because she's just done Broadchurch.
Yeah.
And of course, filming schedules, actually, she'd filmed that series of Broadchurch
probably
a year before.
Yeah.
So there's this huge fallow period of wondering if you're ever going to work again.
Which is mental, considering that, I mean, women already have it unfairly hard enough in the industry. Mm. So for them to do that to her is ridiculous.
Yes.
It is a nonsensical industry, and a lot of it is quite confusing and infuriating, but actually I think as long as you find something that just keeps you ticking creatively, then that gives you something to
ground yourself
in.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for talking to
me. That's all right. Thank you for having me.
So welcome.
That was Tom Weston Jones talking to Ellie Pitkin, who is in the studio with us this show. So the next thing we're going to move off and do is at the top of the show, if you're listening, I spoke about something that happened to me on Friday night. And also on the last Black Show Arts Hour, Vicky was going to see this show. So Vicky and I both saw Max Navan, The End, at the Soho Theatre this week. Vicky went on Tuesday. I went on Friday night. I went along. I got a comp ticket, which was fancy, really nice. And I paid the price for it in more ways than one. We've all actually, just you and I, Ellie, we saw them at the Broccoli Jack working this show.
Yeah, when they were workshopping it ages ago now.
Really long time ago.
Because they took it to Edinburgh Fringe last year.
Mm.
So it must have been at least a year ago. Much longer than that, I would guess. 18 months ago, maybe?
I think so, yeah. So yeah, I saw it back then, and some of the stuff has stayed. And it's a lot more refined. It's really polished. They've been getting fantastic.
Yeah, they only had like 20 minutes of it when we saw it being workshops.
They've also been getting really cool reviews. Edgar Wright tweeted and David Williams as well. But I made the mistake of having known the show a little bit before. I made the mistake of going, they've probably like cancelled out all that audience participation, right? Yeah, like they went to Edinburgh. They're in the Soho Theatre. This is not going to be that kind of show. So we sat at the front.
Sure.
Right at the front, right on the corner. I'd had a few drinks.
Like the supportive people that you are.
Yeah, exactly. Like I wanted to be there and be like, hey guys, I know you a bit. Here I am.
Being supportive.
Yep. So a couple of beers, pretty horrible day also on Friday. So beers were in order. We were sat at the front, show started, and guess who is very, very detailed description of what I was wearing. And I was a major character in this show.
So they set up the bringing of a person on stage by describing what a date for Max looks like.
Mm.
And of course it gets more and more detailed and you realise they're describing you.
Yeah. And then you have to go up and sit next to him.
And play the role.
And play the role of Billy's date. And yeah. Billy's a very, very awkward young man. And so it was terrifying. It was really scary. I've never been on stage recently.
It's quite a big venue as well.
It's really big. It definitely wasn't the Broccoli Jack, that's for sure. And also, I couldn't see anything. Like, the lights are so bright. So that's kind of fine. But I was also I'm not an actor. I don't do that kind of stuff. I'm not used to it. I don't know what the plan is. But I was very aware of, looking up into the crowd.
Were you trying to project and enunciate as well?
I was. Because I was like, okay, I can't just sit here and do nothing. Like, I've got to, be involved. So, I was fine with it. And obviously, I was a couple of drinks in. So, I was, happy about it. I was terrified, but I was doing, faces and stuff into the crowd.
Well
and,
done.
Rescue me faces?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But, funny faces. Because it was, the whole situation was so awkward. And that was the point of it. I was sort of looking up and just being like, and that was getting laughs, and I was like, this is awesome. I can make them do what I want.
Oh, no, you've got a taste for it.
So yeah, that was the first time. And then I obviously went and sat back down in my seat, and then I had the whole adrenaline thing of being like, oh my God, what's just happened? And it made me not be able to follow the rest of the show.
Right.
Because I knew that I was having to go back again. So I was on stage three times. Once I had to do karaoke.
Yeah.
It was, I had to sing What a Wonderful World, and I don't sing.
And then it gets played back to you.
Yep.
Oh, wow.
They recorded it, and then I had to dance. And he swung me around, and he was swinging. I was like, I was looking at Max as he was doing it. I was like, Max, you've got to slow down, because I'm wearing heels, and I'm very drunk. By this point, I've had 5 pints, and I'm like, oh, God. Oh, yeah, it was something else. And then I had to kiss him.
Full on?
I had to kiss it. He was dying after saving my passport from my burning house because it was the end of the world, obviously.
We're allowed to do spoilers because I don't think they're ever doing the show again.
No, I think it was
completely closed now.
Last night on Saturday, I think. He was dying on the ground and I was instructed to go up and comfort my lover as he died. So I had to get down on my knees in a skirt, being like, I'm in front of an entire audience of people. And I had to, like, cradle him. And then I was like, this is really awkward. I wasn't cradling him as I wished. So I had to, like, I sort of grabbed his head a bit and was just sort of stroking him. And then I got the, you know, Ivan was like, and I should kiss him. And I was like, oh, my God, you're going to make him kiss him. And I was sitting there and I was like, maybe I should just kiss my hand and then just put it on his forehead. Maybe that'll be sufficient. But then I was like, no, I've got to do it properly. So I'm like, God.
And what a chore, because Max is so unattractive.
But then I went in and he was like lying, like sort of with his face away from mine. And then he moved his face. And I was like, mate, come on.
So
you
went in for a cheek kiss?
I was going in for cheek kiss. Oh. I got full on lips kiss.
Cheeky.
And then I just had to go back to my seat and apologize to my husband. It was, and then he was wearing so much aftershave that I smelt like him for the entire night, amazing. The rest of the night. I was like, oh God, I feel like I've cheated on something. It was just nothing like I've ever experienced.
I bet the audience
before.
Thought you were a plant because it sounds like you were really, really good.
I think, yeah, both of the guys came up to me and I also had like, it was like being a celebrity because afterwards I went to the bathroom and everyone was like, oh my God, you were so good. And I was like, oh, thank you.
No autographs.
I was like walking around the pub like I was famous. It was actually really fun. It was awful and horrific and really humiliating at the time. But it was like, yeah, it was very exciting.
So you sort of didn't end up being able to follow the show, but like yeah. You've definitely got a story out of it.
Definitely. Yeah. I think, yeah, that was my one thing that I didn't realise would happen, that it was quite difficult to follow what was going on. And I think I probably would have enjoyed the show more if I hadn't have been so involved with it.
Yeah.
Because most of the time when I was in my seat, I was freaking out about the next time I was going to have to be on stage. And also, I really need to go to the toilet halfway through. And I was like, I can't because I'm here and I, you know, they might need me another bit. Yeah. So that's my story about being on stage, which I never want to recreate ever again.
Well, it's difficult because you have to sold yourself as an excellent audience participation person.
I am never sitting in the front row ever again.
That is the
anything.
Best way to avoid it.
Oh yeah.
If you're inconvenient to get to, you're safe.
Yeah. Anyway, so that was Max and Ivan at the end. They're not, like we just said, they're not playing that
No,
again.
That show's finished, but they are taking a new show to Edinburgh, I believe. So I imagine there'll be previews soon.
We should look through the programme in a minute and see if we can find the listing.
I'm going to look right now.
Okay, Ellie, you have a look through the Fringe programme. Matt, you went and saw something on yesterday.
Yeah. So I also got comps through a friend who has connections to the Retired Vicars Network.
Okay.
You guys need to stop boasting.
to Richard III at the Almeida with Ralph Fiennes and Vanessa Redgrave.
Nice.
I love Vanessa Redgrave.
I like her. Ralph
Fiennes.
Yes,
yeah.
I do like him.
So Ralph. Vanessa Redgrave isn't in it much.
Well, she's must get tired easily nowadays.
I suppose, yeah. So she's Margaret of Anjou, who is sort of hanging around. She's the one Lancastrian hanging around in the House of York,
mm-hmm.
being a bit prophetic in places,
mm-hmm. yeah.
and generally unsettling everybody.
So what we were saying, I think, was you and I both don't know histories very well. We know the tragedies, but history's not great knowledge of.
I'm up on my tragedies. Mm-hmm. I know a couple of the comedies fairly well. But
yeah.
No, the histories are a mystery to me.
Oh, yeah. See what you did there. For those of you playing at home, Richard III is the one with the guy who's got a hunchback.
Yeah.
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 Who they recently found in a Leicester car park.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they acknowledge this in the production. So it starts it starts in the Leicester car park with a load of, with all of the cast in like hazard suits doing all the digging up the skeleton.
Wow.
And sort of the news broadcasts coming on over the speakers, and then everybody sort of takes their things off, and then it's
the past.
It's the past. Although, does that work? They didn't make too much of it, and it was just quite a nice way in,
mm-hmm.
and to sort of contextualise it and make it clear, like, this is why we're doing this now.
Mm.
But then, in terms of the period that it's set in, I thought it was quite cleverly done. They're all basically in suits. It's almost costumed like Inception, that everybody is in some variation of a smart black suit, but there's enough variation in kind of is it double-breasted? Has it got a cravat or like a polo neck under it? Or
so is it more timeless?
Or, yeah, it, until it escalates into conflict near the end of the play when there's a rebellion against Richard's rule. And when it's heading into all-out war, everybody's strapping on their medieval armour. So it's going from seeming quite modern to sort of the back into the medieval barbarity of conflict and war.
Interesting. Yeah. I like the Almeida a lot.
Yeah.
I think they've put on really, really good stuff. Did you like it?
I did, yeah.
Yeah? How was Rafe? Ralph?
He was...
Rafe. Don't call him Ralph.
Thank you, Ellie.
Yeah, I thought he was really good. He's, like I say, I didn't really know the play before. He's not a nice character at all. Like, I had kind of got it into my head that Richard III is kind of like an Iago, that it's sort of ambiguous and you don't really know his motivations.
But no, Shakespeare was pretty clear.
Yeah, he's a pretty unambiguous villain. But yeah, what Rafe Fiennes does very well in it is the unctuousness when he's sort of persuading people or trying to convince people that he's less of a threat than he really is, where sort of the sweet, overly sickly sweet smile and
creepy,
yeah, very creepy and sort of slimy a lot of the time. He was good at that.
Yeah, I do quite like Richard III just as a character. I think he's quite interesting because he is very ambiguous. Yeah, that's
yeah,
the word.
Certainly historically.
Yeah.
Ellie, did you manage to find something in that program?
So I found Max Navan's listing. It's called Our Story. Says it's time to get personal in an extraordinary true story. Foster's Edinburgh Comedy Award nominees Max Navan, from BBC Two, BBC Radio Four, boasting, introduce the world to two never before seen characters themselves.
Say what?
And that's quite a departure from what they normally do, which is lots of multi rolling, lots of out there characters. So I'll be really interested to see that. And it's at the Pleasance Dome.
Hopefully they do some London ones after.
Yeah, well, I'm sure they'll be doing some London shows after the Fringe. But if you go up there, be sure to see them because it's always a fantastic show.
Yeah, definitely. One of my favourite things, actually, that I didn't mention before about the end was their programme. They had a great little tourist map. So they've got this fictitious place called, which I think is fictitious, Sudley-on-Sea.
Yeah,
definitely fictitious. You know, so I don't know sometimes in this country. Yeah, so they have this fantastic little like tourist brochure for Sudley-on-Sea, and you open it up and it's got the map and, you know, just like they've named all the roads really funny names like Back Road and Front Road and some other ones that I can't remember that are more funny than those two. But yeah, no, it was a really good show. And speaking of shows, that's really the end of ours.
We are out of
time for another week. So because it's summer and we're going to have some holidays. And some breaks and stuff, the next Blackshire Arts Hour that will be coming to you on Wandsworth Radio will be a replay of our Scare Slam that we did last
November.
It was, at the Horse in Lambeth. So tune in for that. That will be coming to you in a fortnight's time. Lots of scary stories if you missed it when we played it last.
I was about to say sort of unseasonal scary stories, but you never know. It might be a thunderstorm to listen to it in.
We've had them.
You never
They've
know
been
that
happening.
At the moment.
Yeah.
This hasn't been a very particularly great summer, so we don't know what's going to happen. So tune in for that on the next Blackshire Arts Hour. Thank you to my co-hosts for
You're
being
very welcome.
In the studio
Thank you.
With me.
Also, just to mention very quickly, we've got a new writing night coming up on the 12th of July. It's in a new home, the Hen and Chickens. So if you want to come to that, please do. Tickets will be on sale imminently, if not already. Just go to our website, blackshireonline.com, or look at us up on Twitter, at Blackshire Update, or on Facebook, just search for Blackshire Theatre.
Yes, and don't forget to subscribe to our podcast, for we are a podcast and not just a radio show.
Yes.
So do that. And head along to the Hen and Chickens, because we are very excited about that show. I'm unfortunately going to be on holiday.
Boo!
Yeah.
Splitter.
The rest of us will be there.
Yes, we'll be enjoying lots of new writing coming to you at a new venue. So that's the end of the show. Thank you, guys. We will see you in a fortnight's time.
Good night.
Bye.
Bye.